What should a Christian life look like? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I'm David Thomas, currently serving as the Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Our subject for this week's lesson is an interesting one, given the fact that there is a conflict between good and evil, and we are all caught up in it, and yet there is salvation and victory in Christ. The question that comes today is, what should a Christian life look like as it is lived, particularly as it gets to a stage of maturity? And I think there'll be a lot of interesting things to talk about, especially since my two conversation partners are wise men, John Dibdall and Paul Dibdall, two trusted and much appreciated colleagues who have been with me through this quarter. So John and Paul, we have a thought-provoking text in this lesson from James 2 and verse 14. NLT must be the New Living Translation, I think it is. Mm-hmm. What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? What do you think of that text? What should we be talking about here? That's a pretty in-your-face assessment of things, or at least it gives you a challenge that if you profess one thing or some things and they don't show up in your life, is your profession worthy of anything?
The life of faith is not a life of professing certain things
only, or
agreeing to certain propositions in your mind. The life of faith, the Christian life, is a life of love, which is expressed through action.
And if the action
is missing,
then
there are implications.
That's right. How can there be love if there is no action that corresponds with that?
Not really.
Is that not what you were looking for?
Yeah. I was trying to prompt you to to finish.
I was trying to follow the prompting. I wanted to be sure I had.
John, what do you want to say about this?
Well, this raises kind of the same question that we had in the last lesson, last week, because at that time we were talking about law and gospel, okay? James is, I should say, I don't know if I should use the word notorious, but he's—
That's a good word.
—famous for raising an issue that seems to be different from the epistles of Paul. And usually Paul and James are, you know, contrasted with each other, where people say, Paul says you're saved by faith alone, by grace through faith, not of yourselves, not by works of law, lest any man should boast. And then James seems to be saying, not only in this verse, but in other places, you know, show me your faith by your works. This isn't working out here. So people have kind of put them up against each other. And I think it's a false dichotomy. I think that Paul implies that your faith works. He has a faith that works.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And I think that the works come from faith. So I don't think that there's a real conflict, although many have analyzed it in detail and spilled a lot of ink trying to deal with the situation. Actually, the thing that I think is interesting is that really, if you examine the Bible, the two words faith and obedience are not opposites.
They're linked all the time.
They're linked all the time. They come closely. In fact, in other languages, they're very closely linked. And they're not these opposite kinds of things that you find all the time, because true faith implies obedience, and obedience believes that you believe something.
So if that being the case, in other words, that the genuineness of a person's faith or their profession is shown by the fact that, certainly in an imperfect way, the ideals that they espouse, the beliefs, would show up in the way they live.
Sure,
so,
right.
So in a Christian life, what should some of those things be? For example, some people have suggested that with our own sense of being, with our own personhood, we should glorify God. Some people talk about using money in a way that glorifies God. Or, and maybe I should just pull in the question of agency, because long time ago, we talked about the origin of the conflict and how good, the side of good has agents and the side of evil has agents. And the suggestion being made here today is that every Christian, everyone who takes the name of Christ, should invest time and thought and effort, devoted effort, toward being an agent of the kingdom here and now. So what would you list as some of the things that should be readily seen in a Christian life?
Maybe I'm going to make it too simple here, but Jesus said that the mark of his followers would be love.
Okay.
So that to me seems to be something that should be evident. I kind of referenced that already. And I also think of what Paul said, the fruit of the Spirit. When the Holy Spirit is at work in our life, the kind of fruit that it should bear, mm-hmm. we call it the fruits of the Spirit. But again, love, joy, peace, patience, yeah. kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Those things should be imperfectly, as you said, but those should be evidenced in our life.
So, Paul, how would a person see love?
In the way that we treat other people? Obviously, right?
Okay. Well, no, I'm looking for legs here now. That okay. walk on.
Well,
on James,
if you're going to go to James and look at James,
caring for those that are
widows,
are helpless, speaking out and living for not just helping people, but then I think even the structures that would oppress people, we would speak mm-hmm. out against those. Mm-hmm. To live following the model of Jesus, which was a life of love, would mean being interested in people physically, working for physical healing, for social restoration, people that are alienated, isolated, alone. Those are the sorts of things mm-hmm. that I would expect.
I heard you recently elaborate in a very, very good way about being kind. Mm-hmm. I am fascinated by kindness myself because there is so much unkindness, and I have thought of those occasions in my life where people have been kind to me, and the profound blessing of kindness. I heard you talk about how you broke down on the mm-hmm. side of the on the side of the road with a car, and a young man came along, and he was kind, and because of his knowledge, he fixed mm-hmm. the problem, and it was nice to hear you reflecting on the effects of kindness. Right. Well, anybody ever been kind to you, John?
Yes, they have. But the interesting thing about it, I heard the same wonderful presentation that you gave. Try to be kind. That was the admonition. It's not always easy to be kind.
No,
and that's what struck
kind.
Me. Kindness is important, but to try to be kind. And I find that I have to try to be kind because it doesn't always come naturally.
Yeah. It's some people are easy
world.
To be kind to.
Some people have a gift of kindness, and some people are easy to be kind to. Others are more difficult to be kind to, and others of us have more challenges in cultivating that. But the impetus, the push of the Spirit, of faith, mm-hmm. God has been kind to us, ultimately very, very kind to us, unbelievably kind to us. Yeah. Therefore, it follows.
And you pressed me a little bit earlier, Dave, just about, you know, you were looking for legs, you said, not just love or whatever. Yeah. Isn't the golden rule a pretty good summary?
You mean them that's got the gold makes the rules?
Not that one. But to do unto others what you would have them do to you, to treat others in a way that you would like to be treated. That would encompass just about, I mean, kindness, love, patience, all of those kinds of things. Yeah. That's how we want to be treated. Yeah. We ought to treat others.
I've often thought that kindness it requires mindfulness and deliberate thought, but it's often not at all expensive. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes stand in stores embarrassed because some poor young person is standing behind the customer service desk and it had nothing to do with the manufacture of the object or the sale of the object, but they are getting roasted by somebody who is unhappy with the object. And I've thought to myself, sometimes it's flat out embarrassing, the unkindness that is manifested over a mere object. So, John, you look like you want to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, change the subject just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think all of this is extremely valuable, but I think we sometimes don't think, because when we're talking about the Christian life, it seems to me that there's a kind of core attitude toward life that manifests Christianity in a powerful way, joy particularly, something like joy, mm-hmm. something like thankfulness.
Yeah.
I think those are kinds of things that we often don't talk about. I think
humility.
Often in the church, we think of, yes, we think of certain ethical mm-hmm. things. You know, if you're,
I
if
didn't
you're a
do
Christian,
that. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't do that. I
be
did do this.
Honest, yeah.
I was honest. Yeah. I didn't tell lies. But there is a true Christianity, a manifestation of the true Christian life has a kind of attitude, a kind of
aroma.
Joy, peace, aroma.
Gentleness.
Kind of an pervasive influence that just brings peace and joy into situations. And I think that that is something that we need to remember. When we're changed inside and when grace has had its effect in us, that kind of stuff comes out.
Yeah. Wow. Now you've rebuked me gently, John, because I tend to like the curmudgeonly side of life, but that doesn't, that's not anti-Christian.
No, that's
just,
not. No. We'll forgive you, Dave.
I wonder if we reflected on employer-employee relationships. Mm. There's a minefield.
And family, I think. The closest relationships are sometimes the most difficult ones.
You prompt me to tell a story, Paul, in honor of my father-in-law who died this summer. Mm-hmm. I was asked to speak at his funeral, and because of the love of family, you know, it's a difficult thing to do. But when the service was over, and my father-in-law and mother-in-law had been married almost 61 years when he died, and I will never forget, after the service, we went home, and as we came into the house and we were sitting down, and, you know, what do you do after a funeral, you know? And my mother-in-law said to her family, she said, "If I am sure of the salvation of any person, it is of the man whom we just laid to rest." 60 years of living with a person. And that's what she said about his life. And boy, that to me, you know, he was a quiet man. He was a tradesman. He was never up front, no big profile. But, you know, to hear that kind of testimony after 60 years of living with a person, wow, that to me was a very powerful moment.
Yes.
That is a good definition and a good way to close the discussion or something like this, because what—
That's the attitude you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's the attitude I'm talking about. What would people write on your tombstone?
Yeah.
Or what would you like written on your tombstone?
Yeah. I want to throw one more thing in, John, and that is generosity. That, you know, to me, there's something magnificent about generosity that is way underplayed. And I think generosity does some marvelous things for the person being generous, and it does some wonderful things for the person receiving the generosity. And I wish, rather than being known for fighting for different causes, Christians were known for loving and being kind and generous, and of course principled, but not always on every issue. So anyway, thank you very much for your comments here today. They've been very enlightening and helpful. Thanks to Chad Oftahar, our program engineer, and our thanks to you, those of you who listen in. For The Good Word, I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.